So in a lot of those groups, you get people, get parents coming into them when they're first thinking about it or they've just started. And that's exactly what they're doing. A lot of them are doing there, trying to set up school at home. And then you've got these, it's going wrong.
Hello there and welcome to Wild and Finally Fucking Free, where midlife isn't a time of crisis, but a time of metamorphosis. Just like the journey through puberty and pregnancy to postpartum, our midlife transition is also a powerful portal of rebirth. The wise woman inside of us is calling, inviting us to slow down, to take stock, to speak our truth, to burn away all that no longer serves us, ready to step forward into our next phase of life. I'm your host, Kylie Patchett, storyteller and midlife self-care coach, and together we'll unearth the real and raw stories of women who are right in the messy, magical middle or have come out the other side, and the healers who help all of us through these crossroads of change. I hope that as you listen to these tales of breaking the ties that bind, shedding skins and courageously chasing midlife dreams, that you too will answer the wise woman's invitation and set yourself wild and finally fucking free. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I have another beautiful guest with me. It is Karen Rance from the beautiful company Firefly Graphics, and she's here to talk about all things. Holy moly, we're going to cover so much. Schooling, ADHD brains, neurosparkly superpowers, different ways of looking at education. Hello and welcome.
Hey.
Yes. Hello. It's all good. Do you want to actually introduce yourself to our listeners? I know we're going to talk about heaps, but just however you want to introduce yourself. I don't like the formal bio.
I'm Karen. I've been a graphic designer for about 15 years now. I'm also a homeschool mum. And actually graphic design is like my third career. I've done retail and I've done admin and all of that. So this is where I find myself now at the age of 48.
I love it. When I was reading you some of the answers to your questions, I was like, you've had a career path like me. It's like, what's the thing that interests my beautiful brain? That's very good. Very, very cool. We were just chatting before we started recording about the often repeated phrase that people like you and I who have kids that don't fit into the box of mainstream education. And I was saying to you, reading your story, I wish that I had been more curious about homeschooling, because I definitely had a message in my head that it was something that I didn't have the patience for. I didn't have the knowledge or training for. I didn't have the time for. And you have been on quite the journey. So your beautiful son is now how old?
He's 14. I've heard that a lot. No time, no patience. I've heard parents say they're too selfish for homeschool, that they're not capable of homeschooling, that they can't teach their kids anything. And I've probably thought all those things myself at some point, and occasionally, you know, still do every now and then. But a lot of, there's so many stereotypes around homeschooling that, and if you don't know anyone that homeschools, you probably believe those stereotypes. And every homeschooler lives a very different life. There are so many different ways to homeschool. I mean, there are people that homeschool with, you know, they buy a curriculum in a box, basically. And they do workbooks and worksheets and, they, you know, they work through website things, whatever. I don't know. We don't do that, so I don't fully understand that. That would not suit my son at
Some
all.
Other way.
There's so many other ways. There's just natural learning, like letting kids just learn from what they're interested in. There's a lot of talk in some groups about strewing, about how parents will just leave educational things out just for their kids to just wander past and go, oh, that's interesting. And, you know, kids are learning all the time anyway. When we're all learning all the time, it's just that you're more likely to probably remember something if you're interested in it. And that's certainly what we found. And so we've kind of project schooled for the most part. schooled around things that my son's interested in. And if we can get every curriculum area within one project, awesome. We can't always do that. But we don't have English and maths and science as a separate subject. It's all in one.
All in one.
Yeah. Much like life.
Yeah, I know. Crazy. We don't have a math strand in our life and then a science strand.
No.
As you're talking, Karen, you're reminding me, and I cannot remember who or where I heard this, but it was along the lines. I don't know the word strewing, but it was about it may have been where my kids used to go to school, where they basically had this kind of concept that you just exposed kids to lots and lots and lots and lots of different things, and the little person themselves just went towards the thing that sparked joy or curiosity in them, and it was no more complicated than that. And I'm like, well, it sounds a hell of a lot easier than sitting in a classroom being spoken at for specific subjects.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't remember a whole lot of what I learned at school, to be honest. I only really remember the things that are useful to me and that I was really interested in or stuck in my head for some other reason. I'm not a qualified educator, so I can really only speak from our experiences and from what life's been like for us. And I know mainstream schooling works for some kids, and that's great. But there needs to be other options out there, and we're really lucky in Australia that we do have those other options.
Yes. So good.
For the moment. I think Queensland's having a little bit of trouble at the
moment.
Yeah, I was going
to say, not necessarily in the country, but there is online schooling options as well. So I'm very curious. I think we need to kind of take a step back to when you found yourself with a little person who was reading to himself at the age of 3 and 4?
Three, four, somewhere around there.
Intensely curious as a 6-month-old, like far out.
Yes, yeah. And see, he's our only child, and we never spent a lot of time around little kids, babies, and we sort of didn't have anyone to compare him to. That's just how he was. Yeah. But lots of other people would say, even, when I was still in hospital with him, the midwife came in and was, examining and all that. She's like, he's been here before. And, like, there's always been comments like that. And, I'd take him to the shops, when he was one, and he'd just be so engaging with adults. And, hold his own in a conversation, when he's 2 and 3 with an adult. And I've had people say to me, your son's going to be prime minister one day. And all these, things, they would always comment about the fact that he had such a big vocabulary and was just able to just have these conversations. And, when he was about 4, he would talk to us about things like euthanasia and just these big things that he wanted to talk about all the time. And my brain was constantly, I didn't get a rest. I didn't get a break. Until he started reading himself, because then he could, read what he wanted to read, and it gave me a bit of a rest. I was so grateful that he was reading when he was, because he was, honestly, he was awesome kid, but my goodness, I was exhausted, so exhausted.
I'm like, my girls are 12 months apart, and I remember the kind of 2.5 and 3.5 kind of years where just the constant questioning of everything. And by the time I went to bed, I'd be like, but it sounds like a whole other level that you went through.
It really, really was. Like, we used to say that he was just like number 5 from Short Circuit, the robot that would input. Like, it was just constant.
Yeah.
And he was just so switched on. Little did we know that he actually had a hearing difficulty and was lip reading as well.
It's amazing, hey?
Quite a shock to learn that. I mean, his hearing is pretty much fine now. But, yeah, it was quite a shock that he was doing all those things and he couldn't even hear properly.
And I amazing. Think part of your story that I really relate to, I don't want to as we were talking about before, being careful not to cross boundaries of, you know, sharing our kids' lives when it's their story. Mm-hmm. But I related to parts of what I was reading where you were saying, you know, we thought that when he went to school, that school would kind of figure out, you know, not that there was something wrong with him at all, but why he was, you know, taking in so much information, processing it so quickly, yeah, being able to read so much further events. But it sounds like the school system, yeah, did not do that, in a way.
No.
Didn't cope with him not fitting.
No, they really didn't. And I noticed schools are so hugely under-resourced.
Yes.
And underfunded. They really are. And at the time, our son's school was sharing a school psychologist with another school. And, you know, we were put on the list for her to get to him. And, you know, he'd been at school for 18 months and we weren't getting anywhere. And we were just, you know, told, look, he's not a priority. He's coping. He's not a priority. Yet he wasn't coping.
He wasn't coping.
Our life at home was horrible. He wasn't coping. He was just really good at masking. Mm. He's really good at hiding it. And then once he was home and he felt safe,
let it all out.
Then, you know, hell break loose.
Yep.
And, you know, for a child to realize within a couple of weeks of starting school that he was different to the other kids, to then start hiding his ability to read, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It, you know, and he needed more than what they could give him. And it didn't matter what good intentions he kindy teacher had, his pre-primary teacher had, they just didn't have the time and they didn't have the resources. There's too many kids. And then he was also at a school with sort of in a, I guess, a lower socioeconomic area of our town. I mean, great school, but there was a lot of kids who had come from really difficult homes, like were experiencing, you know, trauma. And I can, on one hand, I can understand why he wasn't a priority, because he had a very strong family unit and extended family and all of that. Mm-hmm. But he mattered too. And we couldn't leave him in that situation where he was so distressed. And I was saying to you in the questions that I answered how every year he would get so sick, sort of three-quarters of the way through the year, and the school refusal and all of that. And every time our GP thought he must have glandular fever. He was so unwell, so exhausted, and looking back, I think it was probably autistic burnout, and we didn't know what we were seeing. And, yeah, it's that all stopped once we started homeschooling.
Of course.
I don't think he's been sick since.
No. You know what you're reminding me of? I was having this reflection. We've got we've had such a hot summer here, and finally we've got cooler weather. Like, it's definitely turned to autumn. Although who knows whether it will stay like this, but I was out in the garden, a little bit of fresh rain and everything. And I've got this garden where I'm trying, like, we don't have many gardens apart from things that you can eat, because that's what my husband's definition of gardening is. If you can't eat it, it doesn't get planted. So, right. So most of our garden
that's pretty cool,
which is amazing. I take no credit at all. I cook it, but I do not grow it. But I was just having this reflection moment where in my little garden that I've started to do some, you know, planting of just flowery stuff and, you know, just cute stuff. I accidentally planted my lavender underneath the eaves. And so when it rains, it's not getting any rain. So I'm out, like, it's raining and I'm out there with my watering can, watering my lavender. And it just reminded me of that saying, when a flower doesn't grow, you don't blame the flower, you blame the environment you put it in.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm just like,
for sure.
To differently abled and particularly kids that have differences in processing, taking in information and how they, you know, make connections in that information. When we put them in a school system and then we make them wrong for not being able to cope in that school system, but we actually don't get the environment. It's like, maybe the kid is fine.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And he would often not see the point. Most of the stuff at school, like, you know, you get a math question like, you know, Max had 20 watermelons and blah blah blah, he would be like, why does he have 20 watermelons? Why would he have 20? That's like, he just question everything. question everything. Or like there was a particular question we had once where, what's the probability of a tiger coming through your window? And the answer's meant to be none. And he's like, but what if you live in a zoo? Or yes. What if you live in a country where they have tigers in the wild? Yep. And he would have all these questions. And so a lot of the time he would get these questions wrong.
Yeah.
Or he would find himself in a bit of paralysis, really, where he couldn't answer the question. And then he was trying to figure out how he was supposed to, it was just exhausting for him. Or like, what write the number one after 3,452? And he would write the number one because that's what it said to do.
Yes.
Write the number one.
Literal. Yeah.
So, very, very literal. And he was constantly in trouble. Just no fault of his own.
Yeah, exactly. And you're reminding me of as I'm, I don't know, I feel like I've gone through the stages of grief around ADHD diagnosis and I'm finally at that.
Oh, yeah.
Surrender and curiosity, right? I'm going to get to that as well. But the surrender and curiosity has opened me up to being a little bit more curious about how other people with, like, so I have autism and ADHD, and I've never related to ADHD as the stereotype, even in women, because I'm like, that's not what my brain is like. Mm. But my brain has this very black and white literal side that likes safety, organization, knowing what's coming. And then I have this multicolored rainbow, sparkly unicorn side that's like,
but I can absolutely relate to that.
Yeah. Internally, I've always felt like there's two sides of me that are arguing. And now I understand, okay, it's just two different ways of seeing things. But one of the things that I experience, I think, with the autistic side of my brain, perhaps, and who cares what side of my brain is, what I find myself doing is same sort of thing, literal information. And I would imagine that, like, I can be quite what would be considered argumentative, because when I feel like someone's not understanding what I'm trying to say, I can get stuck. And I don't do it so much anymore because I'm more aware of it. But in that, like, no, but you're still not understanding the fact that if I did live in a zoo, there could be a tiger. And so therefore I am right.
Yeah.
And you can also be right. But it's like that. And I think it's very easy to label that as a kid being difficult or even an adult being difficult. And it's like, you're not trying to be difficult. We're just trying to get you to see a point.
Exactly. That happened to him a lot. Like it really did happen to him a lot. And I was forever at the school, you know, advocating or, you know, intervening or explaining or whatever. You know, he'd come home and he'd tell us something that happened and we'd have to ask him all these questions around it, try to get to, okay, so what actually happened, you know, trying to work it. Because remember, he was still quite young. And even though he had a big, big vocabulary, he couldn't always express himself. And but then I'd have to go ask the teacher what happened. And you know, I was already at the school a lot because I was secretary of the PNC. I did not have time to run my business and be the secretary of the PNC and do all of this as well. So when we started homeschooling, I had more time. Once I got rid of the secretary position, that was. I didn't get rid of it till, you know, that we were partway through our first year of homeschooling. Could not get anybody to take it off my hands. So off we would trot to the school once a week so I could check the mail and go through all the stuff, you know, that was my job to do. And he hated coming with me. And he, even now, he does not like to go past the school. And we've moved around the corner now, but we used to be across the road from the school.
Oh.
And probably a few months ago, we have our GP is on the other side of the school. So it's walking distance. If the school wasn't there, you could see it, it's that close. And he had to meet me there. I was coming back from a networking thing. And he had a doctor's appointment and he had to meet me there. I needed him to walk there and meet me. So he was, he was 14 and he wasn't there on time. Thinking, where are you? And we had my iPhone and I could see him like, what are you doing there? And he had gone the long way.
Yeah.
He had gone probably four times further than he needed to walk because he did not want to walk past the school during the school hours. That's how he still feels about what happened to him when he was in school. And, you know, technically he's in year nine now and he left at the end of year one. And that, I think it's a physical feeling for him.
Yeah, he doesn't feel safe.
That, his body No. Totally. And that's, it's been ages and it, yeah, he's still holding on to that, which is sad. It's really sad for him that he still feels that way. And he won't even visit my his cousin's school for anything. He's been invited to so many different things at her school, and he just won't go because it's a school, and he just won't go in the gates.
Mm. When you first, like, when you realized that keeping him in school was doing so much harm, and taking up, you know, exhausting for you with all the advocating and all of the trying to run interference between a school system that doesn't understand and him who may not be able to stand up for himself in a way because he was so little, intense. When you first decided to homeschool, or as you were deciding to homeschool, did you have the same objections that I said, like, how am I going to do this? I don't know how. I'm not an educator.
I probably did for that whole year of year one, because he'd been wanting us to homeschool him for like a whole year. It took me probably that long to make up my mind, and I thought all those things. Mm-hmm. I really did. And it wasn't until I spoke to a homeschool moderator at the education department, and because I was making some inquiries, and I think it's probably the end of term three of year one.
Yeah.
And I thought, I just need to find out more. And they put me through to a moderator who ended up being our moderator for the first couple of years. Funnily enough, she lived down the street from us.
That's cool.
And I was explaining to her everything that he'd been going through, that I'd been going through, and she understood. And she completely validated all of our concerns, all of our worries, everything that we were upset by.
Yeah.
For the first time ever, someone validated that. Yeah. And I just burst into tears. And I felt really embarrassed that I got so emotional during this conversation. And I said, I'm so sorry. I don't know where this is coming from. I just want to cry.
Relief,
and
probably.
She said, you know, it happens a lot. Yeah, it was relief, and it was also someone actually gets it.
Yeah.
And she said, this happens a lot.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of these sorts of phone calls. She wasn't surprised that I got so upset at all.
Wow.
She was amazing. And because she had also been a PAC teacher. I don't know if you have PAC where you are.
I don't know.
Is it primary something? Or it's primary extension something. I can't remember. I was a PAC kid myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you get pulled out of class and do these extracurricular things. Yes.
We don't.
But she was a PAC teacher. Oh, it's probably got a different name, yeah. So she'd come across a lot of kids like my son, and we'd been holding on to the hope that by the time he got to year four that he would be able to do PAC classes, and maybe that would be us, the thing that saved his, you know, mainstream school education. We've been holding on. And she said to me, or might have been another educator, I'm not sure, that the budget for PAC had been reduced so much, and it was so difficult to get into it, and they had to do all of this testing and everything else to get into it, and they had to work through with like a time test and stuff. And when I heard all of that, I thought, he's got no chance. There's just no way. He might be the kid with the highest IQ, and he will not make it into that program because he is not able to. He really struggled to handwrite, and he wouldn't be able to do that. And that was one of the things that was like, okay, we have to do this. We have to seriously look for homeschooling. And
sorry, that was 3 years down the track too, like grade four, like years.
That's right.
School refusal, coming home, losing your shizzle every afternoon, you advocating.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. And that's a long time when you're that age as well.
Yeah.
A really long time. Not we sure. just couldn't do it. It just couldn't do it.
So when you first started.
So the moderator.
Sorry.
You can. Yep, go on.
No. Sorry. You go.
Like you say. The moderator.
When you first started, because I'm just thinking, how would I go about, like, my kids are out of school now anyway, but how would I go about homeschooling? And I think my initial kind of, I don't know, step-by-step process in my head would just be to recreate a school environment, which obviously is not going to work. Did you do that, or were you like?
No, I did that.
Just
I totally did that. No, most homeschool parents when they come out of a mainstream education system, that's exactly what they do.
Just recreate the same time.
Because we don't know any different.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Don't know any different. And backfired spectacularly. I hear that a lot. I belong to quite a lot of Facebook groups for homeschoolers. There is probably a Facebook group for every type of homeschooler you can imagine, mm-hmm. from those that homeschool for religious reasons, mm-hmm. for those that homeschool because their kids are twice exceptional, or they have additional needs, or they have physical disabilities, or we have homeschool groups that are based around science. Well, you name it. There is a homeschool group on Facebook exists for it. There's regional, there's state, there's national, there's international, there's everything. So in a lot of those groups, you get people, get parents coming into them when they're first thinking about it or they've just started. And that's exactly what they're doing. A lot of them are doing there, trying to set up school at home. And then you've got it's going wrong.
Well, of course it
and then
is.
You've got these experienced home educators that go, hold on. Did you de-school first? It's really important. And it was like, what's de-schooling? And that was something that I hadn't been told about because we knew nobody that homeschooled. And so de-schooling is about, well, they say the general rule of thumb is if you've been at school for 3 years, then you de-school for 3 months. And it's about completely taking the pressure off.
Yeah.
It's about just living your life and just learning what your child is like away from that mainstream system, without all the expectations, without the pressures, without that you have to learn this and this is what you have to do now and this is you can do this for 10 minutes and then you've got to do this, taking away all of that, and just finding out, this is not a term I use often, but what sparks joy in them and what they're interested in. And also you need to figure out, how do they learn?
Yes.
Because everybody learns differently. And mainstream education is really set up about, I think, from what I understand, like two different types of learners, when there's like five or six different types of learners. So if you don't fit in that box, mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about schooling other than mainstream because that's what I went. And then I knew what I hated and I knew what I liked. I was excited for him to go to school. Mm-hmm. I really was.
Yeah.
And so was he. But it just didn't work out, but we started creating school at home. You know, I set up his little desk area and, you know, we got our workbooks and, and I did get workbooks. I got workbooks that were a few years ahead because, you know, in English and maths, he was tracking a few years ahead and, you know, we got everything all organized and all of that. And it blew up in my face in such a spectacular way. We were screaming at each other. It was awful. Yeah. And I was so stressed out. He was stressed out. And I'd be yelling, get your uniform, you're going back to school. And, you know, awful, awful parenting moment. But I think probably every single homeschooler has been through that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you need that time. And we needed to de-school. I needed to de-school in a huge way. And I still catch myself thinking along the mainstream line of things all this time later. So after those first few weeks of absolute hell, and me thinking, what have I done? I've made the biggest mistake. We just took the rest of the term off and we just did things like we went grocery shopping and, you know, we worked out prices and adding up the groceries as we went. And, you know, if we were making a cake, for example, because the cake is just the perfect analogy because who doesn't like cake? if you're making a cake, you've got to follow a recipe, which is English. Think of all the maths that you have to do when you're getting your ingredients and you're working out how much it costs and you're going to the shop and you're buying your ingredients and making sure you get the right quantities and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, once you've got your shopping in your trolley and you're trying to work to a budget, you might be adding it up as you go, all that kind of stuff. You get to the checkout and you're having a conversation with the checkout operator or you're going through a self-serve, and that's learning technology as well. And then when you get home and you're making the cake, you need to measure out the ingredients, you need to weigh the ingredients, you need to follow the recipe, you need to do all the things that you need to do to make the cake.
Yeah.
And there is so much. There's math, English, science, there's life skills in there, there's technology in there, you name it. It ticks a lot of boxes just making a cake. So we did a lot of things like that. We did trips to the zoo, and you for the zoo in
The
Perth,
tiger?
you can get these activity sheets and
I'm sorry, I can't help myself, but now I'm going to see a tiger next time and be like, well, there is a probability if you're bed within there that he would come through the window. Sorry, continue.
Exactly. And I've got a video of him at the zoo telling me all about how the penguins are changing direction underwater. Because he figured it out. By standing and watching them, he'd figured it out. We went on an excursion where we had, 2 minutes to stand in front of this enclosure and find all the information and pick the boxes. We could take our time. And if we wanted to spend 2 hours in front of the penguins, we could spend 2 hours in front of the penguins. Like, we could do whatever he wanted to do, follow his interest wherever he wanted to go. And he was playing a lot of sport at the time as well, because he was a really mad t-baller at that point and then moved on to baseball. And so we would get to training early and we would practice spelling when we were playing catch. And there was just so many other ways to, life is all about learning, and that's what we were doing. And then later on, we brought in things like different projects, and he was doing classes on OutSchool, which is a big international. I don't know if you know OutSchool. Did lots of classes on there. He had one class a few years ago. I think it might have been during lockdown, where he was the only child in the class. It was a really expensive class, but he really wanted to do it, and it was all about artificial intelligence. And the guy that was running the class used to work for NASA.
Whoa.
And
So cool.
the two of them had these amazing conversations
Wow.
about what might happen with artificial intelligence in the future. Because he likes having these big conversations, and he needs people to have these big conversations with. And when we were doing junior archaeology, and he was learning all about Aboriginal archaeology or Indigenous archaeology, he was learning about Viking archaeology, all those things. He got to have these big conversations with an actual archaeologist.
See,
And it
that
was just
can replace that
fantastic.
because it, as you're
No.
talking, actually, there's two things in my mind. First of all, the way that you're talking about approaching learning is to just immerse yourself in the world and learn by in it rather than going to an assigned box classroom that has an assigned curriculum and an assigned blah, blah, blah. And as you said before, if you're not interested in something, you're very unlikely to be engaged and you're very unlikely to retain information. And then
That's
the
right,
second thing is, I'm doing a program at the moment where we talk about the inner child, like speaking with your inner child. And I feel like, because I loved school, I was in an extension program for most of primary school. I loved learning. Like, I actually am like a mad keen learner, apart from the course I just finished, which I did not enjoy at all. But anyway, but I feel like what I'm doing now, inner child wise, nourishing her, was the things that were, I was going to say beaten out of me. That is not true, but conditioned out of me, like the childlike curiosity, playfulness, and the I wonder what would happen here. Oh, I want to do a bit of gardening then. I never like that type of thing. I feel like because I went, 12 years of school, then I did 10 years of university, which I don't use at all. And so I didn't like, I think I was, because I was considered smart in inverted commas, I kind of associated my worth and my the most important thing I needed to do in the world was to use my head. And whilst that satisfying in some way, it's not a full existence. And I feel like I'm going backwards, learning how to live through body, mind, and soul kind of thing. I don't know, that sounds a bit woo, but that's kind of what I'm feeling.
I can relate to that for sure, because I was only thinking about it the other day. And when I was at school, when I loved school too, when I was at school, I was always considered to be the smart one, and I was always called square.
Yep, me
Always,
too.
and I was very quiet. But part of that was I never wanted to be the center of attention. I never wanted to get in trouble. I spent a lot of my school life trying to be invisible. I really, really did. I didn't want to stick out or anything. And yes, I was in a lot of extracurriculars, particularly in primary school. You know, I was in the choir and in a folk singing group, and I played the clarinet, and you know, I was in special maths class, and I was always called on to go out and run errands for teachers because I'd had all my work done and all of that. But I was more concerned about not getting into trouble than anything else. And no one ever thought that I would be do something creative or be a graphic designer. Not in a million years. No one would ever, and I didn't think that either. And I always thought that I was going to do something like be a vet or something like that. And it wasn't until I got to high school when all the wheels fell off, as often does with neurodivergent girls and women, because we're so good at masking. And then once we get to high school, it gets a lot more difficult, especially to navigate those social things, which I really struggled with. And by the time I got to year 11, it was not going well. And I had all these expectations on me as well, probably from within too, of doing, back then it was TE, back then doing TE subjects and going to uni. But I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I knew that I wouldn't have the grades to be a vet. I knew I didn't want to spend another 6 years at uni. And then I get to year 12 and I'd actually had a casual job working for Katie as a junior, like on Thursday nights and Saturday mornings. And I had a really awesome boss. She was just amazing. And she knew that I wanted to leave school. And I, by the sort of term one, year 12, I was just melting down all over the place. And I'd applied for a job at Rockman's because they were looking for a full-time junior. And when she found out, she contacted the regional office or the state office of Katie's at the time in WA. And she said, I want to offer her a full-time job. I don't want to lose her.
I want to
and
snap
they created
her up.
A position for me. Yeah, they created a position for me. And then I had all those expectations, like, well, I have to make this work then. And I ended up managing my own store by the time I was 21 and learning visual merchandising, which I loved, and I won an award for that actually. But I didn't actually wasn't happy. I wasn't happy. But I didn't know that until I had a car accident on my hen's night, and I was going home to get ready for my hen's night. And I was having a really difficult time. I had employees that were twice my age and difficult, really difficult. Did not like listening to 21-year-old. And looking back, I did not have the people skills to manage a team. Yes, I was very good at what I did. But and I would work 70, 80 hours a week. Like, it was insane. And still get paid the same salary. But
been there, done that, got that t-shirt.
Everyone else did the same. And it wasn't until I was home and I had thought, if I could just hit a tree, it would all go away. I wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. And someone ran at the back of me. And I, even though it wasn't a bad accident, I did get whiplash, even though it wasn't hugely terrible accident, I can still see that car that was coming in front of me and have my foot on the brake. I will never forget. That's burned into my brain. And I pulled off the road around the corner to exchange details, managed to make it home, and absolutely just
lost it,
hysterical. And it wasn't that I'd had a car accident. It was that I was thinking what I was thinking before I had that car accident. And so I didn't go back to work for a few weeks because I was about to go on holiday anyway because Cliff and I were getting married. And after that, after the wedding and everything else, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I have to figure out what I want to do. And I have such an awesome husband. He was like, let's do it. So I quit.
Figure it out.
And went back and did, I went and did accounting because I thought that's what I'm going to do. I worked out very quickly that that was not for me. So then I thought, well, all I wanted to be a vet. Maybe I could do vet nursing. So I started an animal care course. And while it was interesting, I realized, actually, you know, what I'm missing is being creative. I need to be creative. And was doing a lot of crafty stuff and things like that. And I picked up work doing admin and all sorts of stuff. I even worked as a telephonist for a taxi company for a while. And then got made a radio operator. This is before computers, like before everything. So I have some stories. I have some stories from that. It's a very interesting job. And it wasn't until, I'd had a few other admin jobs and all of that. And then I picked up a couple of uni courses and I did one on Australian literature and Australian history and photography and all those sorts of things. And then we did a trip around Australia. And then when we got back from that, I got a job working for my mum actually in property management. I was running her little office doing all the admin. And I started to do all these creative things for awards nights and stuff like that. And everyone's going, oh, you should do this for a living and you should really do that. And I started to think about it. And it was around that time I was also designing a lot of t-shirts for my dad because my dad was the head of a running club that he started when I was in grade five.
Yeah.
And I'd been helping him along the way, just helping out because I had some computer skills. And so I ended up going back to school and here I am now. And I never thought I'd be doing something creative. It took me a long time to get here, but all of those things I've done up till then, I use to help my clients.
Yep.
Because I have clients that are retailers and I have clients that, are more office based. I get where they're all coming from. So
this is the golden thread. You actually, when you say it took me a while, you've been graphic designing for 15 years. It took me about 13 and a half years longer than that. And this is actually what I wanted to ask you. So I know you have also recently been diagnosed as neurosparkly, as I say. I don't relate to neurosparkly or even neurodivergent. I feel like it's like boring. How has that been for you? And does it make your attraction to the creative industries kind of not make more sense? But I'm interested to see how you feel your ADHD brain allows you to do the graphic design so easily.
I thought of it that way. One thing I do think it's made me good at is the bigger picture things. And seeing those connections between things that other people don't necessarily see. I'm quite sure it's how I'd managed to run a business and homeschool my son and do all these other things at once and, be on committees and, all these all at the same time. I do think ADHD has been very good for that.
Yep. juggle, 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 juggle.
And I was very worried when I was first diagnosed last year. And it was suggested I go on medication. I was very concerned that it would affect my creativity. And the psychologist I was talking to at the time, she has ADHD herself.
Yeah.
And she said, look, I don't want you to take this the wrong way. She said, but you've got a lot of runs on the board. And she was referring to my age. She said, you have found ways of figuring stuff out. And you've been ADHD this whole time and you've found ways of figuring stuff out. All it's going to do is make it easier for you to do those things. She says, it will not change you. It'll just make it easier.
Yeah.
And I felt relieved when she said that, but I thought, we'll just see, because I hadn't started taking medication yet. And within about a week, I was like, oh, I'm actually spending more time focusing on the one thing at a time instead of five things at once. And I've spent less time on social media, which is great for everybody.
Well, it's a
and
dopamine.
I found that
that's why dopamine, dopamine, dopamine.
I was constantly jumping from one thing to the other. So I've been working on something, and yet, and as soon as I got to a certain point, what if it be 2-3 minutes? I'd go, oh, I've got to check my email. And I'd check my work emails, I'd check my personal emails, I would check Facebook, I would check Instagram, I would go and check, sort of do the rounds, and then I would go back.
Yeah.
Or I would jump onto another project. I couldn't stay on the one project
I'm relating
for any length of time. Drove me crazy. And when I was working on magazines for those last few years, because they were quite, they were very repetitive.
Yes.
And so for the last few years, I felt quite creatively stifled. And so I would have to watch something at the same time. I would have my phone under my monitor and I'd watch a movie that I'd seen before. So it didn't matter if I wasn't fully paying attention. I would have to have that going at the same time. And now I don't have to do that. I'd have to have more like white noise or like classical music or something in the background instead. So that's the difference that's made.
Yeah. I feel like I remember the first day I took medication and I rang my friend who had also just been diagnosed but hadn't tried medication yet, because it was a lot harder for her in New South Wales to get medication. Although I'd been diagnosed by a psychiatrist. So her pathway was a bit different. But I remember ringing her and saying, usually in my head, there's like 58 things going on and they're all competing for attention. It's like, oh, all that noise. And it's all very exciting, but doesn't make for an exhausting existence, because I also was right smack of perimenopause and estrogen falling, which then affects dopamine reserve. Anyway, and I remember being on the phone to her and I'm like, I rang her as I was taking the medication and we're just talking. And then about 45 minutes later, I was like, there's actually nothing in my head speaking at me. And she's like, what? And I'm like, you know, that all of those things that are always bouncing around in your brain, like ping pong balls, or I always say like trying to herd mosquitoes, like it's just impossible.
Yeah, herding cats.
Not there anymore. And she's like, I was like, no, seriously. And I had the same concerns that you just said, but what I've found is it has actually allowed me to have a quieter background, so that the things that come easily to me are much more potent because I stay engaged with them rather than going off to try and find some dopamine on social media or in my inbox or whatever. But I definitely did go through that, like I said before, the, you know, stages of grief where it's like, I'm angry. How have I gotten to 47 and no one has told me this before? Because, you know, all that.
Yeah, I went through that too. Yeah, feeling very frustrated that and what I understood it, because one, women are better at masking and that kind of stuff. And we didn't know as much back then. So on one hand, I understood why. But there was a bit of grief there as how different might my life have been if I had known before? How different would school have been if I'd known before? And something I always wanted to do, I think, like, had this romanticized idea of being a uni student.
Yeah.
And it probably is a very romanticized idea of being a uni student.
Yep.
And I actually enrolled in a uni course that starts in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And even though it's only an 8-week course, it's something I really want to do, and it'll be a good experience, I hope. And I was actually really surprised to find out that they have like an accessibility program. And because I have ADHD, they're going to give me a hand, like with flexibility and deadlines and stuff like that. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
great. Okay.
Really cool that. And particularly because I'm running my business and still homeschooling, like any flexibility. That would be lovely. But yeah, I was really surprised to hear that. But really, really cool.
Yeah.
That they acknowledge.
Yeah. The course that I just finished is about training and assessment. And we did a whole like module on reasonable adjustment for differently abled people. And I'm here going, raging ADHD, and I'm just learning right at the end of a 1-year course that there was adjustments that could be made. I probably wouldn't have done it.
Oh no.
I just wanted to get through it anyway, but it is nice to know that there is awareness that, yeah, for anyone that has any differing abilities, that there is actually reasonable adjustments that can be made in learning pathways. And hopefully with a few, I know it's going to be a few generations, but hopefully our mainstream system will also better recognize different, because I, when you said about different learning types, like I remember our oldest daughter, I remember we took her to someone to, because she was just really not coping in school and she was really anxious. And that was the first time someone said to me, get her jumping, like a little, you know, trampoline, and do schoolwork stuff like verbally while she's jumping. So we kind of like the throwing thing made an enormous difference, because she, like her, I was going to say her husband, she does not have one of those, like my husband, is a very kinesthetic learner. Like he can do anything with his hands. If you sit him down and say, you've got to read this 400-page thing, he'd be like, I'd rather stick a fork in my eye. And she is the same.
Yeah.
And like I don't know, I look back and go,
I wish I'd known more, but I also think, even like you're saying, like, I feel like diagnosis for me has allowed me to have more compassion for myself, because there's a lot of things that I was making myself that is just the way that I work. And I also think that I really firmly believe we can trust the timing of our lives. So I believe that things unfold as they should, and maybe we just weren't meant to be diagnosed until this time of our lives, but I'm very grateful to
her. Yeah, and I can relate to that. Yeah, and because I'm sort of, I just found out only 6 months ago, so I'm still learning, okay, so what, how does ADHD affect me and what's just me?
Yeah.
And like, I'm still working that out.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I remember thinking that, because, you know, we're going through a potential ADHD diagnosis for our son too. So, you know, gifted autistic, and I think he's ADHD as well. But that still remains to be seen. And it's actually enabled me to understand him a little bit better.
Yes.
And he's so easily distracted, and all this, and the whole dopamine thing, the whole lot. I can totally see that in him. And I've even been able to understand my dad a bit better, because I'm quite sure that my dad would have been diagnosed ADHD. He's dementia now, and apparently there is a link between ADHD and dementia, I believe. I'm not sure what the studies are at this point. I think it's a fairly new study. But I do wonder if maybe it's your brain just burning out.
Because that's literally what I'm thinking. All the ping pong activity just like wrecks your neurons eventually.
Yeah. I mean, my dad's a very smart man.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he's had a lot of careers, like a lot of careers, and he's always busy, always had for a project. And so do I always have to have something, or several things on the go.
Yeah.
I just can't, if I don't. So it's been very interesting.
That's been the biggest thing that I've forgiven myself for finally, because I have always had a story of myself that if I could just stick to something, then I'd get somewhere, in inverted commas, whatever the hell that means. And I actually counted up the other day, because my daughters, one of them's had gone through the first year of an apprenticeship, and she's left both of them, and she's like, oh, I just can't finish anything. And I'm like, it is more silly to spend your time doing something that does not speak to you than it is to try something different and see what feels good.
For sure.
And I would stand for sure. And so then, just for shits and giggles, excuse my language, we counted up the amount of careers I've had, and I'm up to 17.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
Because sometimes when I'm interviewing someone, like, I feel like I'm like, oh, yeah, I can relate to that. I'm like, shut up. Like, just stop.
And I bet you've taken something from all 17 to apply it in what you're doing now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I think is so great, that I can take everything that I've done up to this point and apply it to what I do.
Give it together.
We apply it to homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And even the different things my husband has done, even though he's, you know, a boilermaker, and it's what he's been for most of his life, he did have a few times that we went and did different things.
Yep.
And we're able to use all of that life experience to give to our son. And the reason that he's now at IDEA, because he started IDEA Academy beginning of this year, is that we can't give him much more right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now at a point where he needs more than what we can give him. So an idea can expose him to a lot more than we can. And, you know, our son has had, three businesses? Three businesses?
Yes. That's crazy.
Business when he was six. Business when he was six. And then he had his merch printing business for 2 years, which wound up last year. And now he's opened a Bricklink store for Lego parts.
Yep.
And he's relaunched his chocolate business again under a new name, because it's a bit more grown up this time and all of that.
I love
getting some serious orders for Easter. Like, oh, my goodness. We drove and ordered a Fremantle yesterday. I was a big one too.
That's so cool.
It's been really good. Man, it's really good chocolate. So it's good. So we need to get it all out of the house. Feel like I can eat it. But he's taken something from all these different experiences he's had.
Yeah.
And, it's really great that he's been exposed to all of it.
So good. It's like having the life smorgasbord and snacking on different things so you know what it tastes like. And that's what I've really realized about myself, that thinking about something is not telling me anything. I have to actually do it to see what it feels like. Yeah. And that is often why I get out of careers, because I'm like, I thought that this was going to be like this, but actually the reality, like I studied forensic science because I thought I'm going to be a detective. I'm going to be, you know, and no, I found myself,
that's cool,
by myself in a, like pipetting in a lab coat and a fume hood by myself. Like the very worst thing that you could do to a crazy extroverted ADHD person is put them by themselves in silence doing something boring and repetitive. And very quickly I was like, I think I've taken a wrong turn. So
yeah, but, like maybe the counting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But like you said, it all weaves together into whatever we're meant to do. And I think that that is the beauty of snacking on the smorgasbord, because you do get a sense of what you like the taste of and what you don't, and what you want to spit out.
So. And we're alive for a lot longer now than we were, you know, 100 years ago. So it's really good to have more than one career.
Yeah. And we don't have to stay the same career for 50 years and get the gold watch at the end, because I couldn't think of anything more boring. Anyway. I have so enjoyed our chat. Thank you. I know you mentioned the Idea Academy. If anyone is listening and they're in, so it's in Perth, is that right? Or is it in?
Yeah. But, so they've got their big hub, or their, I guess, the first place I started was in St. George's Terrace in Perth. IDEA stands for Innovation Design Entrepreneurship Academy. So and they basically start at year 10. Year 10, year 11, year 12 is what they had. So year 10 pathways, year 11 is interns, and year 12 are graduates. Mm-hmm. Every child there is on their own learning journey. They don't have classrooms. They don't have teachers. They have facilitators. They have a learning hub. Mm-hmm. And there's 100 kids now at the Perth one, but they're never all there at the same time.
Yeah.
They're all either doing paid work experience, or they're at TAFE or at uni, or they're there at IDEA, or they're working from home. These kids are very much treated like co-workers, almost like adults. They've given a lot of autonomy, and yes, they do expect them to behave in a certain way well, which is great.
Yes.
They're given a lot of independence, but they're also given a lot of support. Mm. Particularly neurodivergent students are given a lot of support. And IDEA are all about what do you love to do?
Yes.
What are you good at? What does the world need? And what can I get paid for? Mm-hmm. And if you can get all four of those things to intersect, what a life you're going to lead. So IDEA started a hub because, you know, I'm an hour south of Perth, so they actually started a hub literally 10 minutes from where we are. And I've been keeping my eye on this place for a while. Been watching their progress since they started in 2020. Mm-hmm. And when I saw them announce they were opening a hub in the Peel region, I'm like, oh, my goodness. So we went to an information night and then we went to an interview, and our son did not think that he was going to like going there, because he doesn't like being around. He's very introverted and he doesn't, you know, doesn't like leave the house some days. We've had a very difficult year as well, and he really didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. But after he went to the interview and he spoke to Rebecca, one of the founders, he started to realise that, hey, this is someone that actually gets me.
Yeah.
And they had a great conversation. It was really, really nice. And then we didn't think he was going to be able to start till next year, because he's only technically in year 9.
Yeah.
But they allowed him to start a year early. And when you're doing pathways at the moment, if you're homeschooling, it's easier because you don't need to get an exemption and all this kind of stuff. Like with the education department, it's a bit, I don't fully understand that. But he just goes 2 days a week right now. Mm-hmm. And there's only 6 kids in total at the Peel one at the moment, which is perfect for our son. And he's been working with other kids on coming up with a business idea and a pitch and all that kind of stuff. They've been doing group bonding sort of activities. They've been doing a lot of stuff about mental health and well-being. Like, there's a big focus on that at IDEA. They have mentors there. They have people that specifically hired just to look after the kids' well-being.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing. And just about every single facilitator has their own business on the side.
Yep.
So they know about all this stuff.
Amazing. Oh, my goodness. I want to find out how to get there because I'm like, I was actually just talking to my personal trainer was sharing with me about one of his kids, and he was kind of talking down the disability label kind of thing. And I'm like, hey, I don't know if you know, but I am like, I have raging ADHD and autism, and I really believe that it actually gives me all of these amazing skills to be able to be outside of the box and innovate and see things in a different way. And that's what we need in the world. And you could see his face kind of like, that's actually not the box that I'd put that label in. And it, and I'm like, yes, this is what we need. We need to break the box that says neurodivergence is some bad thing and just make it like I would say it's not a deficit. It's a difference. That's it. Like
And there's definitely some that struggle with that, and it's a problem for some. Like they don't have it
100%,
as good as say you and I do.
Yeah.
And I will say too that, you know, our son was very angry about being differently wired. He's been very angry for a very long time about being differently wired. He blames me too, because you know I'm his mum. It's come from me, I reckon.
It's mum's fault.
But for the first time. Since he started an idea for the first time ever, he's not angry about being autistic, and he's asking questions about being autistic and gifted, and he's asked to see his report and read them, and he's talked to his psychologist about what's in them for the first time ever.
Yeah,
and that's just because he's around other kids that also think differently, and he doesn't feel like he's the only one for once in his life. And this is because he felt like that way before homeschooling. Mm. And, yeah, it's just been, this year has been such an amazing transformative year so far for him. And we're not even at the end of term one yet. Like, I can't wait to see what happens at the end of, you know, just, can't wait. I can't wait to see where he goes with it.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey. I have already, even though we haven't recorded yet and pressed stop, I've actually added the idea link to the bottom of the show notes for anyone who's listening, who wants to look into different ways of educating, and particularly if you have a sense already that the mainstream school system is creating more stress than is healthy for your child, because they are not just brains on legs, they are human beings.
Maybe you could include a link for Home Education WA.
Oh, yes.
And there's probably the equivalent in every state. Mm-hmm. I think it's hewa.org.
Mm-hmm.
I can double check that for you though. But there is the equivalent in each state, I'm sure. And every state has different rules and regulations around homeschooling. So, like, different expectations and all that kind of stuff. But you sort of need to find all that stuff out first.
Thank you so much. I have really enjoyed getting to know more about you and more about your beautiful son and everything that you've learned. It's so good because, just exposing each other to different options is so important. So thank you for sharing your story with
me. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in, my friend. And if you enjoyed this ep, please share it with another midlife friend or take the opportunity to go and rate and review the show on your favorite listening platform. All of these things really help us to reach more women in midlife. Now, I don't know if you know, but I am both a storyteller who helps healers and helpers capture and communicate their work through the magic of storytelling, and I'm a midlife self-care coach who is super passionate about helping other women reframe perimenopause and midlife as a powerful and purposeful time of transformation. To find out more about me and my work, you can head to Instagram at Kylie Patchett, or my website, kpcreative.com.au, and that is kpkreative.com.au, and you will find all of those links in the show notes. Have a spectacular day, and may you be setting yourself wild and finally fucking free.